Blog Talk Radio.
Back in time, the seasons pass, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight, we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football History and its Memorabilia on the Gridiron Greats Publisher and Broadcasting Network. In conjunction with Slick Enterprises, and we're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. I'm Bob Slick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I would like to introduce my co-host. He's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Larger. He hails from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show this evening.
Bob, so happy to be here. You are in rare form. Your football came off outstanding. I got to say, it's like you and I, we're constantly talking. We're constantly texting. It's, I mean, when a show rolls around, it's almost like, I mean, just a continuation of conversations we constantly have throughout the week. It's just, it's correct. Fun. I love it.
You're correct in what you say. It's almost like a natural progression, bringing our thoughts to the public and bringing information to the public on so many different subjects of football history and memorabilia. It's great. And we are going to lead off tonight in our pregame. And we're going to talk about a few things, and I'm going to lead off with the incredible auction that was on eBay for a 1933 Diamond Matchbook, which was a silver Arnie Hebner Green Bay Packer matchbook. And it ended up selling for $1,791.99. I was floored by that price. Floored. Totally floored.
One of the rarest matchbooks in the set, and a Packer. You talk about the Big Five: Packers, Steelers, Cowboys, you know, Patriots. I mean, there are certain teams that they're the most widely collected teams. I mean, so it touched a lot of bases.
And I think what really happened now is I think the Diamond matchbooks are especially becoming much more popular and much more appreciated. Whereas I can remember, in the early 90s, mid-90s, they still weren't overly popular, and you could get them, for a song. However, the more rare pieces of the Diamond Matchbook sets, just like the Hebner one and a few other ones, were still very difficult to come by. It rarely came out to the market. But the more common ones, it was not unheard of. You could buy a full matchbook for, under $5, and they were in pristine condition. It was incredible, truly incredible.
the red,
but seeing
the red Grange
seeing what's
match,
happening today,
Seeing what's happening today.
I mean, there's a really big demand now, strong demand, and not just for, one color of each player or whatever. A lot of collectors are now trying to collect all the colors, and all the sets. So it's pretty interesting. It's good to see for the hobby.
Yeah.
But
the Grange matchbook in that set is $250 for the Grange. I mean, and it's been pretty consistent. But you know, the Nagurski, the Cliff Battles. There's Dutch Clark one is one of my favorites. Just a really good photo. But I mean, they've been, you know, matchbooks have been one of those little esoteric things that people collect. It's not a mainstream thing. It's just a really cool thing and condition sensitive. Obviously, a full matchbook is better with all the matches in it is better with the striker on it. I mean, there's all kinds of little nuances you have, you know, within that set.
Exactly. And it's, like I said, it's finally it's getting some appreciation now, especially for the more advanced collectors that they're really realizing, you know, that, hey, this is, you know, the first quote unquote card/photo of a lot of these players. And it is very collectible, and the prices are starting to see it. So I'm real happy for it. I honestly thought, I didn't think that was going to break like 1,100 at the most. But when I saw the final hammer, and I was like, wow, that was incredible. Incredible to see. And I guess the gal who's selling, who sold it, she either inherited or she is helping her uncle sell his collection. And I don't have a full story on it, but she does have a lot of very interesting football and baseball items that she's selling on eBay. So pretty interesting. I know you saw a few oddball and interesting items that went for some serious money.
Some things, you know, that we watch that you and I tech. But are you sitting in front of a computer? I never got a chance to see, but there was a 1916 M101 Jim Thorpe, and the M101 is blank backed, of course. I mean, a PSA 8-point, very very tough card to find at high grade. It's, you know, thin. It's a thin one. It's Thorpe playing for the Giants. You know, condescending himself and this great football athlete, putting on a baseball uniform, just whoring himself out for money. Just, it's always a shame to see great footballers, you know, have to, you know, play baseball. but just a great, I mean, in an 8.5, I think that is the highest grade. I don't think there's a 9. I know there's a couple 8s out there.
I don't think so either.
But I was watching it. It was up to 40. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Bob.
No, I was going to say, I know for a fact there was nothing higher graded than that week. And that's the one thing I did look up on it. And so what's it going for now? Because I lost track of it.
It ended yesterday, and it was at $41,000 the last time I looked.
Wow.
And I hate to say it.
Wow.
I didn't look to see what it ended at. If you're sitting in front of your computer, could you look up, 1916 Jim Thorpe? But it was at $41,000, if you can imagine. I mean, but this is – you know, and 1916, other than, like, I mean, the Z-nut with him paying for the Portland Beavers, there's very few. I mean, what is a rookie card? I mean, we've got postcards from Thorpe playing in the Stockholm Olympics. There's quite a few postcards that are played. There's this is just one of the first cards of him wearing a uniform. That's an actual card, coming with a product versus a postcard. So, I mean, it touches a lot of bases. It's Hall of Famer, one of the greatest athletes of the century. I mean, could be said between him and Bo Jackson, you know, both of them just once in a lifetime athletes, but obviously one of the highest in its grade. $41,000 is what it was at yesterday. And I was just kind of smiling seeing that result. I consider Thorpe to be a footballer before a baseball guy, so I just
right. Well, again, that's
always
that's
fun to see.
Going to be demanded on both sides of the coin. It's going to be both. It's going to be both a demand for baseball, collectors, and it's also going to be demanded by football collectors
footballers
at the same time. So
those football
exactly.
guys.
So
yeah, did you see the did you find it closed auction? It would have closed yesterday. And I apologize.
No problem. Who was it again?
And then 1916 M101 Jim Thorpe PSA 8.5.
No, I mean, what
would be
who's the auction house again? I forgot.
Oh shoot! I say, oh, it's PWCC.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if I mentioned this, but the owner of PWCC lives about five houses up from me. So I was, if I wanted, I was going to say just, you know,
drive over.
You know, just walk on up and get it. Just kind of funny. Another good, just chime in when you find it, but another really big auction item that got my, you know, raised my eyebrow. Huggins and Scott, which is, you know, we're going through a little bit of a bleak time, you know, through the desert right now of auctions. You know, and I always love to have at least one or two good auctions up where I can watch stuff, but Huggins and Scott fired off a couple days ago. And they have an auction that ends next week. And one of their marquee auction items is a sealed case of 1981 Wax Packs box. So there are 20 1981 Wax Packs boxes with 36 packs each inside this sealed case. And just how is something 40 years just inside of a case, just these should be pristine, non-X'd out, just beautiful boxes. And 1981 boxes, Wax Packs boxes, you know, sealed from BBC going $1,600 to $2,000 right now. With 20 of these, you're talking about a $40,000, upwards of $40,000. But what an incredible, I mean,
wow.
How many more, you know, sealed cases of, you know, 40-year-old wax are there floating around out there? Just
right.
Incredible.
Right.
I love it.
All right,
it was
the high
bidder briefly at 5,000. Oh, yep.
The Thorpe went for $49,100.
$49,000. That's pretty good price. $49,100.
Very rare. Plus $100 for standard shipping. So
they got to get you coming and going, don't they?
Jeez.
They get you coming and going.
Unbelievable.
Seriously, $49,000 for Jim Thorpe card. I mean, obviously in a very high condition, but also just
you know, just a
sealed, you know, case of you know of Wax Packs boxes from 1981. Obviously the Montana rookie card, the very coveted Steve Largent 1981 card in there. A lot of high power cards.
Well, that is
that's my obligatory
reality.
Steve Largent plug for the show.
It's a star. It, you know, 81, 82, in my opinion, and 84. You got a lot of stars in it, and those sets to me are always going to, you know, generate value. And to a lesser degree, you know, 85 and 86, 85 with the black borders, trying to find them in nice condition, 86 with the rice rookie.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know. It's always going to be collected one way or the other. In my opinion, 1973 to 1988 tops is always going to be in demand. It's always going to be collected. There's always going to be collectors out there putting sets together of those years. And it's to me, it's very good for the hobby, any way you look at it. But, you know, seeing that price run open, that's, you know, just takes it to yet another level. And that's it.
Yeah.
Unopened material is red hot.
It is
no other way to say it.
I think I mentioned a couple shows ago, I started dipping my toe back into a little bit of unopened. Just one or two samples of each year, you know, starting at, you know, 78, 79, you know, up through 88. But, you know, Love of the Game, Love of the Game, Al Crisafulli had a 76 Wax Pack box in his last auction that I really thought about taking down, but it went a little past my price range. But something about seeing that stuff sitting on a shelf, it's just they're not making any more of it. And every time one sells, it's a coin flip as to whether that person's opening it.
I remember the second National in Baltimore. I opened up a, and I had had it since I was from 76. I opened up a 76 wax pack at the show and got nothing out of it whatsoever. It was basically all comments, but it was really nice to see the cards come out as clean as they did. Really no issues with the exception of one card. So it was pretty good, pretty good.
I don't know if I told you this, but I bought a bunch of wax. I bought a bunch of wax at a National, and obviously I don't want to ship that home, so I just put it in my carry-on. And I go through the X-ray. I think this was Baltimore. Chicago, you're correct. I guess you have
Chicago.
Heard the story.
I remember this now.
But the person sees the gum in like an 84 wax packs box, you know, pulls it aside thinking it's, you know, C4 or something. And I've got, the TSA agent and a boss over there looking. I'm like, these are wax pack boxes. This is, ladies manhandling.
Yeah.
I'm like, would you mind being careful? That's very expensive. And I ended up opening up a pack and sticking the gum in my mouth. I'm like, see, it's gum. I'm like, by the way, I'm one of the first nerds leaving this convention. You're going to see a lot more of us. You better get used to seeing some gum. So,
Wow. That's funny. Unbelievable. Well, all right. Our special guest is here, and I'd like to get to his introduction and start talking. Our special guest tonight is a longtime advanced collector and hobby icon who's specialized over the years in Heartland statues, exhibits, post-serial cards, and Salada tea coins. He is truly a hobby icon, and I'd like to welcome to our show this evening, Mr. Fred McKay. Fred, welcome.
Hey, gentlemen. Good afternoon.
Hello. Good afternoon to you, Fred. Welcome to the show.
I don't know if I belong on the show after that icon. I think that's just a good word for old, isn't it?
No.
Vintage. Vintage is how we say
vintage.
Old around here.
Excuse me. I'm vintage, but only back to the 60s and 50s and 60s is my area of expertise.
I like using strong adjectives sometimes, so that's one of my. An icon is a favorite word of mine when I talk. And Fred, I believe we met at the last Chicago National. We had our little pizza dinner there, and
right.
I think you attended and we talked a few times throughout the show. So starting off, my first question is tonight, how'd you become interested in football and collecting football items?
Well, my introduction to the hobby was when I moved to a new neighborhood and all the kids there were collecting baseball cards. I never really had any before that, but in order to fit in, as kids like to do, I got into collecting the cards. And the first set that I really collected brand new, when the series came out, the 1960 Topps Baseball. And I can still remember where I was, what store, where I was standing when I opened up my first pack and saw Dave Hillman of the Red Sox. And then, of course, as the season went on, then the football cards came out. So then I was collecting the 1960 Topps football cards.
Wow.
It's always good to hear of somebody coming to their senses and stepping away from baseball to football.
I did collect both for quite a while, and I still do. I got into the organized hobby, what I'll call the organized hobby, later on in 1963. My parents and I were visiting some relatives in Virginia, and there was a guy selling Japanese baseball cards in the back of the Sporting News at the time.
Oh, wow.
And he happened to be in that area of Virginia, so I enticed my father to take me over to visit this fellow in his apartment. And he sold me some Japanese baseball cards and gave me a few things I'd never seen before, like 1939 play ball baseball, and he gave me some football cards, too.
Wow.
But the big thing that really opened it up to me, he gave me some old news publications, newsletters and collectors, things like, I don't know if either of you remember, Ball Card Collector by George Robert Martin out of Tennessee.
Oh,
and, of course, in those
wow.
days, it was all mimeograph things, pretty much, that were sent out. And that opened it up to me. Guys had ads in there, what they were looking for, and it was all done over the mail. And I started writing and making some trades through the mail back in those days. So that was really how I got involved in the hobby and collecting football things.
How old were you then when you started corresponding with people to trade?
Probably 13.
Good for
13
you.
Or 14,
that's
and I was already collecting a lot of coins by then because they came out in 1962.
Great.
So I was collecting the Heartlands by then as well. And post-serial cards, of course, came out 61, 62, and 63. Actually, they started in 1960. I didn't start till 61. And the football cards came out in 62. So I was collecting all those all the way along the line as a kid, of course, like everybody else, cutting them off the back of the box.
Wow.
Wow.
Speaking of Heartland statues, I really appreciate you emailing me, to our listeners, Bob will typically introduce a guest, have a rough, list of questions, and then, then there's usually a couple of emails to get batted back and forth just to clarify. Heartland statues are something I'm not very familiar with. So I, kind of took it offline and, followed up. I appreciated your time explaining it to me. But I own one Heartland statue. I don't know a lot about it. So how did you get into those? And, what is it about them that drew you to it?
Well, my first introduction was about 1959, I guess, or 60. My parents went away for the weekend to Atlantic City, New Jersey, and I stayed with my grandparents. And as a lot of parents do, when they come back, they bring a little something to the kid, to pacify him for being away for the weekend. And they brought me a Nellie Fox Heartland statue. That was the first one I'd ever seen or had. And from there on, every birthday or Christmas or Easter or whatever, where I would get gifts from my parents or family, I always would get Heartland statues. So that's what started me off on the trail of those, and I ended up completing all of them, the baseball ones. The football ones weren't as immediately available for some reason in my area of New Jersey, Delaware, Pennsylvania area that I could find. But I did find the Philadelphia Eagles, of course, which is our home team. So I did have the Eagles running back and lineman. They issued two for each team at the time, 14 teams back then. And they had a running back pose and a lineman pose, they called them. And I did have the Eagles, but I never was able to expand my collection too much to get other teams until much later. And then I did pick up a pretty big group in a Mastro auction, I'm guessing now 18 years ago or so, from a fellow who actually I knew back in the day named Jack Urban in Wisconsin. It ended up being his collection of statues and boxes, and it was a big enough collection that it wasn't complete, so it allowed me to, chase after, which is the fun, of course, and trying to complete the set myself.
Huh. And how does that work? You said it's two per team per year?
They were basically issued just in 1 year, 1962, roughly. I mean, they may have come out late 61 and gone into early 63, but what happened, the Heartland Company, who produced these statues, was bought out by Revlon, and they bought the factory in order to make cosmetic makeup kits. So they stopped making the statues. So basically, 1962 is the established year for the Heartland football. The baseball went from 58 to 62. The football is pretty much considered 1962. So only the 1 year did they issue these, and they issued two poses for each team. Again, a running back pose and a lineman pose.
Wow. It's funny, the word Heartland statue has almost become generic, because you'll see people like on eBay selling, imitation Heartland statues and, but I've just always considered them to be Heartland.
The problem is there's been about five different incarnations of Heartland, of the Heartland Company. The original one was in Heartland, Wisconsin, and they're the ones that making the ones that we're talking about. And then later down the line, when it was closed up, the rights to them were sold to somebody in Missouri who really didn't do much with them. Then the rights were sold to somebody in Dallas who came out with new, quote-unquote, Heartland statues. And then it went to Louisiana, who made reprints or reproductions of the originals and added on to other things. And then it went to Missouri again, where they did make a few, including a Johnny Unitas remake, which I neglected to mention. The original ones, they did make only two players, and one was Johnny Unitas and the other was John Arnett. And they're a little bit different in the construction and in the boxes than the generic football teams. And the generic football ones came with a page of stickers that you could decals, they should call them, with the numbers. So you could take out your St. Louis Cardinals and put number 8 on it for Larry. I can't think of his name now. Larry Wilson.
Larry Wilson.
Right, or you could take 32 and make Jim Brown of the Browns, or 31 for the Packers and make it Jim Taylor. So they had these decals in there that you could actually make the statue of whatever player that was your favorite player of the team.
Right.
And so the Missouri things? Company That's... later did a reproduction of Johnny Unitas. That's the only football one that was done. And then later on, the Louisiana company made some generic LSU statues, which are smaller, don't look anything at all like the originals. But then going back to the originals again, somehow, some way, they made statues for the Louisiana State University. And it was right around the time, I guess maybe a little bit after, when that they were the national champions. And I guess that's when Billy Cannon was with them, as I recall. And they somehow, we don't know the history of these Louisiana State University Heartlands are very, very rare. And there's been two stories that they shipped a few of them down to the bookstore to see if they would sell. And the other story was they gave them out at games, and LSU lost the game that day, and all the statues were thrown down on the ground and destroyed. Well, I don't think they were doing giveaways back then that I'm aware of. So the story sort of makes more sense to me.
I was going to say, the story I've heard was that they were supposed to be sold in the school bookstore, but they didn't. They really didn't have great demand for it. So I heard that story. I never heard the second story, though.
That first story makes more sense to me.
What are the dimensions of these Heartland statues? Because I bought a quote-unquote Heartland statue of Red Grange a couple years ago, and they were calling it a Heartland statue, but obviously, you know, it's modeled after the statue of Grange outside of Soldier Stadium. What are the dimensions of these?
Well, the later Heartlands that were done, the Ohio company did a lot of things like stadium giveaways and things, and they were, is yours like a solid bronze color or something like that?
It is, yes, sir.
Yeah, those were the later incarnations. The Dallas, the Heartland name was gotten. The original ones are about eight feet high. They came on a green base that has the team name and the NFL logo on the base.
Not 8 feet high. No, 8 feet or 8 inches?
8 inches. I'm sorry, did I say feet?
Eight inches. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had a spinal tap moment there.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so yeah, this one's the Red Grange one's about 8 inches. Okay, so as you can see, just the Heartland name getting thrown around and bought and sold. I thought I had a Heartland statue. I had no idea that those were issued only in one year.
You do have a Heartland statue, just not an original Heartland statue issued in the '60s, which came in the team colors. You know, the jerseys are the right color. The helmets are the right colors. I have some things from the company files where they actually have the logos and team colors and things like that, like on a mock-up type-up sheet.
Oh, how cool.
Wow.
How cool is that, right?
Yeah, I like all the oddball stuff and things I collect. I only collect pretty much now four things, so I can go really crazy in them in terms of, you know, I love all the ads and the displays and contracts and things like that for the things I do collect.
Yeah.
Fred, is there one team for the original Heartlands that is more difficult to obtain than any other? Have you noticed that over the years?
Yes, no question. Besides the LSU, which again are very, very difficult.
Right.
The most difficult NFL one is the Redskins lineman for some reason. I don't know why that is on everybody's want list. It ends up being the last one of the few. I might know of maybe four or five complete sets at the most in the hobby. I'm not saying there aren't more, but that I know of. And a lot of the guys still need the Redskins linemen. Historically, the Cowboys, the Redskins, the Lions, and the 49ers have been the toughest ones. Then you can go to Colts. Things like the Packers are pretty common. The Giants are pretty common. Again, I guess because of the Packers, obviously, because of the fandom and being in Wisconsin where they were issued. or made, I should say, and the Giants because of the large population center, I would think. The Bears are pretty common. The Browns are pretty common. When I say common, I'm talking in relationship to the rest of them.
Right. That's good to know. I never realized it was the Redskins lineman. That's the worst one.
Yep,
interesting.
Seems to be. Unitas and Arnett can be found somewhat easily. The Arnett more so than the Unitas, I guess, because he's not as popular as the Unitas, so Unitas is out there quite a bit.
Right. Ooh. Now, I know you also collect the Salada T-Coins and the exhibit cards, and you have pretty advanced collections in both. How'd you get started on those and describe it a little?
Yeah, the exhibit cards I started, my father worked for DuPont, and at the end of the summer, there was an amusement park near us, and at the end of the summer, DuPont would rent out the entire park just for the employees of the DuPont company, so we could go and just go on all the rides for free, didn't have to worry about tickets or anything like that, and of course, there was an arcade there. And there was exhibit cards, and you put in your 2 pennies and push it in the slot and pull it out, and here comes your exhibit card. So that's how I got started on my exhibit cards. And as I've done with the four or five things
that
I collect, pretty much, it's all things I collected as a kid, the Salada coins.
I beg your pardon. What year was that that you were putting your money in your exhibit display?
Again, that was probably early 60s. The problem with that in terms of football was football exhibits supposedly were only like 49, 50, 51, 52. But,
yeah, exactly.
But they're still showing up in exhibit card catalogs in 1955.
So they
were still out there somewhere, somehow, and I do recall getting them in some of the exhibit machines. Obviously, these amusement parks would buy them in bricks and put them in the machine, and if they hadn't sold out, they just kept popping them in the machine. So I was getting both baseball and football cards out of them at the time.
Fascinating. That's cool. I love the exhibits. I always thought they were 48 to 52, as Bob mentioned. A couple years ago, a guy on a chat board had refurbished one of the exhibit machines, and I bought it.
Good.
It was sad because he didn't package it very well, and the glass got broken on while it was being shipped. But it was still just cool just to have it. And I collected those exhibits. So I was able to put a couple raw football cards, in there, and it was just I just loved it. Exhibits are one of the best sets, I think.
Yeah, and especially like you said, in the machines. I've got two or three of the machines myself.
Yeah. Do you get those graded?
Wow.
They look really good in an STC holder. I don't even think PSA grades them. Do you get those graded, or are your collections raw?
PSA doesn't grade. SGC does, the football. I'm an old head. I'm not a graded guy, per se. To me, that's money, and I'm a collector. I don't care what things are worth. I just collect them. That being said, I do have some things that are graded, but majority of my cards are ungraded.
Yeah.
The one football card I did get graded, however, was the Bednarik checklist card that I don't think there's more than one known that I'm aware of anyway. And I did get that graded because some people were telling me it wasn't real. And I had the paper version that would show up in the exhibit card machine headers. I had one or two of those with the checklist card on it, but there was a thin paper. But the card itself, I did get that graded, so I do have that in my collection.
Outstanding. When did you get that? Because one just sold at an auction probably like 2 years ago, I believe, just to show how rare it was. It's even when I was collecting it, I never saw one for sale. So.
Yeah, that was me. Guilty. That was... out of, here I go with forgetting names again, Mike, out in your neck of the woods, big football collector.
Blaisdell?
Yes, Mike Blaisdell collection.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, Mike. We roomed together at the last Chicago show. I forgot his last name. I apologize.
No, that was through BST then, John Spano. You're right. That was. They did sell it that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I just have to, when I collect a few things, I have to have all this stuff around it in my mind. So that was sort of a no-brainer for me to go after that. Sorry, Carl. I know Carl wanted it too.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to pick up a couple of Mike Blaisdell collectible items too for my collection. So it's always an honor to have those.
I agree. He has a tremendous collection. Or had to. I'm sure he still does, but the things he let go were mind blowing.
Yeah, he's got an amazing collecting. He kept his Steve Largent stuff, so he's still got an amazing collection.
Good.
How about the Celestity coins? Because those bring back nice memories for me too. So,
yeah, again, right in my wheelhouse, age-wise, 12 years old, baseball and football, tea bag boxes and the junket rented custard pudding boxes, and just had those as a kid. I remember having my father built me two gigantic bulletin boards on my wall to hang up all my sports stuff. And you could just take a thumbtack and catch it in the top of the rim of the coin and push it into the bulletin board, and the coins would sit up there. And I've got pictures of to this day, I have two photographs of my room back from 1963, I think it was. And you can see there's a lot of coins hanging on my bulletin board. And just had those as a kid. Never had a complete set. But as I got older and advanced in the hobby, then I did manage to finish the set off and pick up one of the boxes. They had salesmen's like promotional boxes that they would give to the supermarket guys, you know. And I have a box of that, and I've got an uncut sheet of this, a lot of coins also, the metal uncut sheet, where you can actually see a complete set, and then you can see a lot of the, not short print, but extra print coins that were on there.
Yeah.
So there's actually more Jim Browns and Johnny Unitas's than one would think. They put those on there, obviously, because they were going to be more popular.
I still remember.
Could you share that picture with us?
I think I have it somewhere online. I mean, I can pop it back if you'd like me to put it somewhere. I'd be glad to put it somewhere you want to tell me. I'll be glad to put it on.
Email it in that email, chain that Bob had between us, if you wouldn't mind. I just want to
say that's fine.
I absolutely love old photos like that, especially of sets that I'm not very familiar with, like the slot of, coins.
Yeah.
I remember doing a story for Sports Collectors Digest in the 90s on the Salada T coins, and I wrote to the factory, and there was a guy who worked there who had a very strong interest in it, so he gave me a lot of nice interesting information on it. I remember writing that article way back when. It's got to be over 30 years ago now. But it was a fascinating set to collect for football. And you're right, a lot of the double and triple prints were star players and unknown players were single prints.
Yep.
So that's why you're paying so much for, what you would be considered common in a set or basically a very unknown player type of situation. But I always liked that set. I did complete that set. That's one set I will not get rid of. Mm. That beautiful set. Beautiful. It displays so nicely, and it's just so cool to look at.
It is,
amazing. Amazing set.
Well, Fred, you've name-dropped a lot of really cool, rare, sets that I admire from afar. So, I mean, it's got to be tough, but could you whittle down, what your top five, six favorite things are that you collect?
The Heartland statues, the Salada coins, exhibit card, post serial cards, and when I say these things again, I'm talking all things to do with them, like I said, uncut sheets and contracts and display props and display pieces and things like that too. Those are the main four or five things that I really collect now, and I go heavy in them.
So I guess to narrow down a little bit more. Within those, what are your favorite things in your collection, the top five or six? I beg your pardon, I should have,
I see what you're saying. Favorites and rarities can sometimes be different things.
That's very true.
Yeah, it's, I guess, a combination of things. The LSU's, I do have one of the two LSU statues, so that has to be one of my top things. The Bednarik checklist card, no question, is, again, that is rarity, and I have to like it because of that. In post-serial, I have a master set of the football set. and the majority of the supermarket display kit that they issued to the supermarkets with banners and signage and things
like that.
I don't have the really big sign that has Paul Hornung on it and some other players. I don't have that. I have some pieces of it. That's one thing I am missing. I like my exhibit football cards in the colors because they're pretty hard to come by. I've got colors in some of the exhibit football cards. And I was out to the exhibit factory, actually, in 1966 in Chicago, and I got a tour by the owner of the exhibit card company. And he was nice enough to gift me with about 12 uncut sheets, which I still have to this day, of exhibit cards. But unfortunately, there was no football in 1966 left over, I guess. So I never ended up with any of the football sheets I wish I had. I do have some smaller of the sports champions, which included some football cards. I do have some of those uncut and about like 6 or 8 card sheets too. But I think my main big things would be the LSU running back, the master set of post serial, of course my collection of Heartland football too, and then the exhibits and the colors are my main favorite things of all the football things that I have.
I think we're going to ask the same question.
How many cards are in the actual post-serial football master set?
I should know that. 500 and some.
Wow.
I don't know for sure. And the master set, for those who don't know, is Jim Brown, let's say, for instance, was issued on 3 different serials. So again, I'm pulling these numbers out of the air. Don't quote me on anything for sure. So if he was on a Raisin Bran, a Sugar Crisp, and a Crispy Critters, there's ways to tell which card came off of which box. And
okay.
A lot of guys have uncut panels that they can compare. There's differences in coloring. There's differences in cropping of the photo. There's other minute differences that you can see when you can compare panel to panel. And a really good way to find this information, if anybody's interested, is a fellow named Ken Marks literally wrote a book about it. And there's a fellow named Robin Pauls who has a great website. I think it's Post Serial Football.
Yeah.
You can actually go on and read and see what we're talking about with these master sets and how to tell the difference in between the cards. And some of it is really, really minute and hard to tell, even when you see examples or read about examples online or in the book. So it really is something to go after a master set. And there's even, I mean, like anything else, master sets can be defined a lot of different ways. So, but there
are
500 and some, I think, in the master set.
Wow.
What about panels? Go ahead, Bob.
I was going to say we had Robin on the show a few years back.
Yes.
And the number 500 something sticks in my mind, and I remember that now. And we were both shocked when we heard there were that many cards. So basically, it's almost 2.5 sets that you're putting together instead of a 200 card set, you know, with 500 plus cards. Wow.
Yeah. And there's even more things being found out probably since Robin talked to you on the phone on the podcast about it too, that we're finding out ways to tell other cards that were basically the same panel would be printed on, let's say, Alphabet and I'm just trying to think of another serial that it would be on Alphabet. I'm looking at a list here now. I'm trying to think. Well, Bran Flakes would be the same as Sugar Crisp, just say. So the same panel with the same 6 or 7 guys would be on 2 different serials. And it's sometimes hard to tell the difference that way. And that's what we're learning how to do now, or not me so much as other people. But that's adding to the number of cards in the master set.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, when you only collect a few, you can go crazy like that. Yeah. When you try to collect everything, you can't do that. So,
right.
Within
exactly.
that set, there's the panels on the box, and I've heard various things like how many variations of panels are there? What would you consider a master set of the panels?
That just came up recently on Finnish Football Collectors. I think you can get a set out of 88 panels. But there was more than 88 panels, if I remember what I was reading recently on online anyway. I'm sure there. I know there's probably a couple guys that have sets on panels. I don't. I sort of got into this late in the game in terms of meaning the last 4 or 5 years, where these guys have been doing it for 15 or 20. So they're, you know, way far more advanced than I and ones to talk to about it. But, yeah, the panels, some people even, I do have one or two panels. I do have one or two complete boxes that someone still has the serial in them. One doesn't. And then, of course, they made the, there was just recently a sale of an unopened package of post variety pack or post tens, if you know what I'm talking about, little small boxes. In the cellophane, and one card, the alphabet box on those, in those serials came with a card on the back, and one of those just popped up on eBay, and it was gobbled up very shortly, and then showed up in an REA auction and went for pretty big money, and that was in the last few months. So the little small alphabet boxes with a single card on the back are pretty hard to find, too.
Wow.
How cool.
Amazing. That, you mentioned the exhibit... visiting the exhibit factory. Do you have any collecting stories you'd like to share with our audience? I know you talked a bit about that. Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about on that?
There's probably a lot, but more baseball, unfortunately, than football. I'm just trying to think what else football-related.
Sharing a room with Mike Blaisdell, the Nationals, pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool. That was nice information from him. That's for sure. And of course, the pizza dinner that we all went out to, that Bob referenced earlier. No, in terms of that, I mean, I wasn't at the Heartland Factory. As I said, I remember talking about post cereal. There's a story. I remember as a kid again, on Saturdays they would have kids films in the afternoon, and it'd always be like a little cereal beforehand. When I say cereal, with an S. With like Zorro, not the Zorro from TV, but there'd be a Zorro, and at the end of the 10-minute little promo, he would be on a conveyor belt going toward a saw, you know, buzz saw, and come back next week to see how Zorro gets out of this one, and then there'd be the movie afterwards. Well, before the movie, I would go in, and other kids would go in, and I'd be trading cards, the post-serial cards, with kids from other neighborhoods that I wouldn't normally see. But we would meet at the movie theater, and I could trade with this guy who was, you know, 3 miles away or 4 miles away that you wouldn't normally see riding your bike. You just traded with the guys in your own neighborhood at the time. So that's a fond memory that I have of trading cards in the back of the movie theater, post-serial cards with those guys. I remember going to a store, a toy store in Delaware, and seeing an entire wall of Heartland statues and just – you know, baseball and football.
Wow.
And just being blown out of my mind. Of course, if I could go back in time and buy them all, as we all know, that's not possible. But that vision is still burned in my head, too.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Was that? What, I beg your pardon, what year was that?
That was probably, again, in the early 60s, I would guess 61, 62. Yeah, because football was out, so I'm guessing it would be 62. Yeah.
That's just amazing. I mean, the exhibit factory, the Heartland. I mean, that's really cool. I used to have a printer's proof uncut sheet of 48 exhibit, and it was paper rolled up, and it was probably like 5x6, so maybe it was 30 cards. And it was mixed. It wasn't just football on the sheet. It was all of the other things that exhibit, you know, came out with. You know, the movie stars, you know, et cetera. I thought it was pretty interesting. They mixed all that together. But you know, then when they sold it, they sold it by sport. You know, you could get them in football or baseball.
Okay, that's strange. You said it was thin paper, though.
Very thin paper. So it's printer's proof. It had writing on it and everything. Blank backed, obviously.
Well, those would be the ones generally used for the headers that go on the front of the machines, the thin paper ones. I've never seen a sheet that has different things on them. Now, when you first started talking, I thought you were talking Sports Champions, which is another exhibit that has everything from football to boat racers to marble players to ice skaters to hockey players in it. That's where I thought you were going, but when you said movie stars, then that threw me for a loop. So I guess maybe what they did, they printed the ones for the headers that way. I have some headers with the single cards on them, but I've never seen an uncut sheet with movie stars and other sports players on them. That's very interesting.
Yeah, and I have a couple of headers, all dual panel header, headers, and they're one panel. So it was just always unusual. It was in pretty tough shape. It came folded up in the creases where. It's in pretty tough shape, but
yeah.
Just remember that was just one more piece to the mystery of how things were made,
I have one cool header that actually has cards on it, and it's a double panel, and it has both checklist cards side by side, the DiMaggio on the right in the middle and the Bednarik in the middle on the left-hand side touching each other, and then on the left-hand side is football, and on the right-hand side are the baseball players.
Hmm.
Oh, wow.
I've never seen another one of those with both checklists on one header.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Joe.
Oh, no, go for it. No, your show, Bob.
No, I was just going to say I never heard of the both baseball and football on it like that. But again, like you're saying, with their header cards, they probably made them just for the machines, obviously, and they're enticing.
Good point.
Kids who collect both to buy the put their coins in and get them.
Yeah, they'd have them in the same machines. They're usually two slots. The bigger machines had two slots to put your pennies in. So on the left slot would be the football in this instance, and on the right slot would be the baseball.
Right.
Fred, you've mentioned such a swath of things you collect. I mean, and very thinly traded esoteric stuff. I mean, but. What would you consider your white whale? What's on your want list, that you're constantly scouring auctions and eBay for?
Well, my big thing right now is the LSU lineman in football. That's the last football statue that I need. I need one more box, which is, for some reason, one of the easiest statues to find is the Cardinals lineman. Now, that said, the Cardinals running back is very difficult to find. I don't know why that is, but at any rate, I need the last box that I need is the Cardinals lineman. And we don't think or know or have ever seen an LSU box. So we're not sure that exists. We don't know how they were given to LSU or how if they were whatever. But the box for the Cardinals linemen, and if there are boxes for the LSU statues, that would be the main thing. And then the final big whale would be the post-serial supermarket display, the large piece with the Paul Hornung picture, and then there's individual big cards of Unitas and Kilmer, and I can't think of the third player's name, but there's a large thing of that. Then there's some Paul Hornung posters also that were part of the post-serial Tang. They were all sort of general food-related issues. Those are the main things that I'm really looking for. So if anybody out there has an LSU lineman original, please let me know. That's my real big white whale.
Well, Fred, you came to the right place. We call that the Gridiron Great Bump, where guests come on and ask for things and wishes do come true. It's happened to me. I've had people reach out to Bob and like, hey, tell Joe I got this. So,
oh, great. Well, give them my phone number and email. Let me know. I appreciate it. If anybody wants information or help or anything on the few things we've talked about, I'd be glad to share and give any information and help in trading things that I can.
What's the dimensions of that Paul Hornung big display?
I should know that, too. I'm thinking it's like 36 by 24, something like that.
I was going to say it's 2 by 3.
Is it? Okay. I thought it was even bigger than that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I'm almost positive it's 2x3, 24x36. So.
Well, it's not really square, though, what I'm talking about.
Right. Because
I do have the baseball ones that are big like that, but I don't have the football ones. So.
Right.
Yeah, but it is quite big, and I think it's, it's not as much. I think it is cardboard, or it's a little thicker than normal card, the cardstock is.
Right. All right, we're almost out of time, Fred. I got one final question to ask you. Any final thoughts and any advice for our listeners who may be beginning collectors in these areas?
Well, the thing I always tell people, and again, this is an old head philosophy, I guess, is you'll never go wrong collecting things that you like. It never mattered to me what things were worth or valued. If I liked it, I went after it. If I didn't, I didn't. And you'll never get hurt collecting things that you like, because you appreciate them, and you'll most likely keep them. If you go after the money, that's a whole other story. That's not my story. But again, I don't think you ever go wrong collecting things that you like. And I was never a big condition freak. And I know that flies in the face of, excuse me, everything going on now. But I always would get something and try to upgrade it if I could. Some things I didn't think I'd find down the road, but I would get it just to have it and upgrade it later. I never passed things by that I needed. And the other thing I always said was, anything in my collection is always available for trade if I'm getting something I want more in return. So some people, again, it goes in their collection, it never comes out. Some people will, you know, not trade at all. Some people trade anything. Those are always my philosophies, right or wrong, but that's what I always felt.
I think you're in the right category, Fred. I always enjoy that question. That's one of the ones, you know, we usually, you know, trail off with in an interview. And I absolutely love hearing, you know, quote unquote vintage collectors such as yourself, just your advice to, you know, to new collectors. And the classy guests, it usually follows along that line. Just collect what you like, and, you know, be open and just have fun, and don't, you know, think about the money, but don't focus on the money, kind of thing. So,
yeah,
no,
the other thing I like is learning about the things that I collect. Like I said, I have company records from Heartlands. I have company records from Salada. And other guys have records from Post Serial that we share among each other, and things you can learn and figure out. And there's still questions that we'll never have answers to. But learning and hearing and talking to other collectors enable us to advance the hobby.
That's very true. Very true. Fred, thank you for being on tonight. I appreciate it. It's been an incredible education in 30 minutes. It's amazing, truly amazing.
Gentlemen, I enjoyed it. Hope everything goes well with both of you and all of your listeners.
Well, thank you, Fred.
You're a hobby icon, whether you like it or not. So.
I hear you. Again, just put fooled in parentheses after that, and then you got it right.
All right. Fred McKay.
Thank you so
tonight.
Much, Fred.
Fred, thanks for being on.
Goodbye, gentlemen.
Joe, we're down to 2 minutes, our two-minute warning wrap-up. Handing off to you. What'd you pick up on tonight's show?
What a classy guy. When really good collectors like that, people who've just been in the hobby for a long time, you know, talk about their advice. Sometimes it gives me goosebumps, and with Fred it did. It really resonates with me. I mean, and you hear that from a lot of the more advanced, the tenured, you know, collectors, the people who have, you know, willingness to share knowledge, you know, pass it between fellow collectors, just that kind of, you know, community. It's just such a good outlook to have on the hobby. It's so good for the hobby. I love hearing it.
Well, to me, it makes me feel good about the hobby, number one, because that's, you know, what he says, I echo to a large degree. You got to have fun doing this, and you got to spread knowledge. If you're not going to spread knowledge, we're not going to have a hobby down the road. That's my biggest concern, especially when it comes to football. That's always been my concern. So I look at that, and I look at Fred, and, you know, I know I'm a few years younger than Fred, but I'm up there too now, and I'm saying to myself, you know, it's still a fun hobby. You can still learn things, and that's the nice part about it. And I do love, though, his concentration in those four areas, the Saladas, the exhibits, the posts, and the Heartlands. It's pretty cool. All right, we're almost out of time. If you're not a subscriber to Gridiron Greats Magazine, what are you waiting for? GridironGreatsMagazine.com. Joe, 2 seconds. Final wrap.
Best seat in the damn house, Captain. I love it. Thank you for another good show, sir.
It's good. Thank you, Joe. And we'll be back hopefully next week with another show. Thanks for listening.
Ba-ba-ba, ba-ba.